1, 2, 3.
You're listening to Sports Talk Chicago with your host, John Zagluhl.
John, I am fantastic. Thank you for having me. You got an awesome voice, man, and that was a terrific intro. You're like a pro's pro.
You know, that was the first time somebody ever said that, John. No, you're the first person to ever say anything like that. That's very interesting.
You got it, John. Anything for a fellow Chicago guy.
Well, what a great question.
That's a great question. Nobody's actually asked me that.
I like it. What a great question. I never heard that before.
Chase Utley is what? You're saying he's not a Hall of Fame candidate?
You know, it's funny. You may be the only person that I've heard make that connection.
Thank you, John, for having me. I'm doing great. By the way, you have an outstanding voice. Not sure about your face because I haven't met you, but your voice is great.
You're doing a much better job than I ever did. You've had some heavy hitters guests on too, man, so keep up the good work. But it's good to be with you, and I'm ready to talk sports.
Hello, everybody, and welcome in to Sports Talk Chicago. My name is John Zagluhl. Great to have you here. On the Thursday edition of the program, what will the Bears do at quarterback? They have interest in Davis Mills, and Teddy Bridgewater just got traded. We'll explain all that in just a moment. Plus, a brand new interview today with Mark Giangreco, the former lead sports anchor at ABC 7 Chicago. We talk with him about what happened, the aftermath of his firing, what he's about to do moving forward, and so much more. It's a must-listen interview, and it comes up near the midway point of this show. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at John Z Sports and on Facebook at John Zagluhl. And if you want to listen to this show at any time in podcast form, search up Sports Talk Chicago on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and SportsTalkChicago.com. Today's show is brought to you by State Farm agent Brian McDevitt. Here's the deal. When you combine State Farm home and auto insurance, you save an average of $889. State Farm agent Brian McDevitt is ready to help you combine home and auto and save in Chicago and the surrounding suburbs. Call Brian today at 630-796-2662. That's 630-796-2662. Or visit his website, RyanIsMyAgent.com. That's RyanIsMyAgent.com. And make sure to mention Sports Talk Chicago. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. I want to start today with this. What does it take to be a successful NFL GM? What do you need to do to deserve that title? Everybody will say Super Bowl. Cap management, scouting, drafting. All of that matters without question. But to me, the number one thing that makes you successful is, do you have a quarterback? Do you have a plan at that position? Because if you do, you're fine. The most important position in all of sports is the NFL quarterback. They dictate how far or how little you succeed and how far you go. That's it. And as Bears fans know, if you don't have a quarterback, you're not winning nothing. Talked about this the other day. I had David Schuster on, and if you missed that, go back and listen. And I asked him, what is Ryan Pace's legacy? And he told me the fact that all he does is, quote, piss away money on quarterbacks that make no difference. He's right. I've seen a lot of Ryan Pace defense. I've seen people say, wait till the draft. We'll do a good job this time. Give him another chance. Hey, drafted Darnell Mooney, Eddie Jackson, David Montgomery, Tariq Cohen. I'm not saying he's not a good scout. I'm not saying he can't engineer picks late in the draft. Hey, he's a great fifth-round picker. If that's a thing, it's a thing. He does a hell of a job at picking guys and finding diamonds in the rough late. But when it comes to the big pick, when it comes to the one that matters, that changes the direction of the organization, he just can't do it. So I don't get why I've seen confidence in him getting the job done now. What makes now different from before? I'm asking. And what further proves this, and what should prove it to you, is the Bears are officially interested in Davis Mills. Right. I know I said don't trade up for Justin Fields. Do whatever you can to get him, if it means you avoid Davis Mills. I didn't think we'd go this far down the rabbit hole, but here we are. I don't even understand this. I'm at a loss for words. Davis Mills has thrown less passes in college than Mitch. Less. And you could say whatever you want. He went to Stanford. Good attributes. I don't care. Haven't we learned a lesson here? His comparison is Andy Dalton, Kirk Cousins. I don't get it. Look, if you want to make a splash at quarterback, do it. I'd rather the Bears actually give up their future. As much as I hate to say it, I'd rather them do that than pick the next Andy Dalton. They already have Andy Dalton. What, do they need another one? Quote from Bear Goggles On. Davis Mills is obviously inexperienced. It shows a lot of the time when he does not get the look. Something is off from what he expects. When there's a small kink in the system, he tends to malfunction. His biggest issue comes with pocket presence under pressure. Does that sound familiar, Bears fans? Why? Why again? And then to make matters worse, Teddy Bridgewater just got traded. And I don't know if you've seen the terms of the contract and what happened. The Broncos gave up a sixth-round pick, and they're paying him $3 million for the entire season. Carolina's paying $7 million. So hold on a minute. The Bears went out. They paid Andy Dalton $10 million. Nick Foles still on the books. They want to move up in the draft or take Davis Mills, who means absolutely nothing. Meanwhile, Teddy Bridgewater, who is objectively better than Andy Dalton, is getting paid less, and the Broncos had to give up a meaningless pick. Do we see it now? Does that breakdown allow you to see what Ryan Pace is as a GM? I get it. He's trying. He's putting in effort. Tough position, I know. But at what point are we just going to sit here and take more of this? Look, he missed on Mitch, missed on Mike Glennon, missed on Nick Foles, probably going to miss on Andy Dalton. That's four chances in my book. That's enough. One or two at most. Now they're infatuated with some Andy Dalton lookalike from college, who's thrown less passes than Mitch? I mean, all you could do is laugh. What's my reaction supposed to be to this? I'm just at a loss. I don't know. How is this acceptable? And I'm not a Teddy Bridgewater fan, but he is better than Andy Dalton. That's a fact. Completion percentage, way better. 3,700 yards last year, 15 touchdowns, 11 picks. The touchdown total is an issue, but I'm okay to look past that, to be honest. He's younger. There are a lot of positives if you're just comparing the two straight up. If you're comparing strictly Andy Dalton to Teddy Bridgewater. Pretty easy to decipher who's better and who isn't. And it turns out Teddy Bridgewater is going to cost $7 million less. Oh, and by the way, he's still going into a quarterback competition. He's not the starter. So he would have been okay competing here. There was no need to tell Teddy, you're the starter. This proves it. He's walking into a competition, and he's okay with it, apparently. Would have been okay with it here. Oh, but who am I kidding? If the Bears engineered a trade for Teddy Bridgewater, they'd probably give up even more. See, that's the problem comparing apples to oranges like this. It's actually wrong to say the Bears would have given up a sixth-round pick only, would have only paid $3 million. That's incorrect. Knowing Ryan Pace, he would have given up more. I like to think of myself as an optimistic guy. I did see some hope for the Bears, despite all this chaos. Darnell Mooney, Allen Robinson, they're back. Andy Dalton is here. He could do something, maybe. Montgomery and Cohen. They could have maybe gone 9-8, 10-7. But every time I try, consciously, to give them the benefit of the doubt, can't do it. Because then stuff like this happens. You're sitting here salivating over someone worse than Mitch Trubisky, with less experience collegiately. Meanwhile, you pay a veteran $10 million, and another veteran who's better is being paid $3 million. I try to hope for the best with this team, but it seems like every time I do, it just gets taken away. Completely taken away. I mean, are you kidding me? Teddy Bridgewater was available for $3 million. But no, you cut Andy Dalton a big-time check for doing nothing. For playing Mitch Trubisky level. Oh, and what do you know? Mitch signed for $1.5 million. What the hell is this? It's just inexplicable. And then you're drafting an Andy Dalton lookalike. If I was looking at this from a complete outsider perspective and I didn't know nothing about football, I would think Ryan Pace is doing this on purpose, sabotaging the team. None of this makes sense. None of this adds up. There are few who still think Ryan Pace is a good GM. Snap out of it. All of this should be a warning sign. What did I say to open up this show? You could be a great scout, great drafter in the late rounds. Congratulations. If you don't get the number one position correct year after year, sorry, you're not a good GM. Just a fact. Ryan Pace, great scout. And it's obvious. Drafted David Montgomery, Tariq Cohen, Darnell Mooney, Eddie Jackson, Roquan Smith. Great scout. Can't be a GM. That's just it. Can't be a GM. This is ridiculous. He could scout defense. He could scout offense. Can't be a GM. Can't scout a quarterback. Can't get it right. He's been here since 2014. He can't get it right. And unless the Bears move up tomorrow, unless they move up significantly and take Trey Lance, Zach Wilson, Trevor Lawrence, this won't be good. If they're infatuated with Davis Mills, that tells me all I need to know about what's going on. It should tell you that, too. I mean, 7 touchdowns, 3 picks for Stanford as a senior in 5 games, 8 games as a junior, 11 touchdowns, 5 picks. I mean, this guy wasn't even a starter till his junior year. He was nothing. No one cared. Sounds like Mitch. Except to Mitch's credit, at least he did somewhat perform in the NFL. I don't know what this guy's going to do. Never an All-American. Never honored for anything. Mitch did have 1 good year. He's had nothing. I don't get it. And every Bears fan watching or listening right now should be outraged. Really outraged. I would take this personally because haven't we learned? You sign Andy Dalton, you want to draft another Andy Dalton? You sign Andy for $10 million and Teddy Bridgewater goes out, gets traded, and the Broncos are going to pay him $3 million? Mitch Trubisky left for $1.5 million, $2 million? Does anyone understand? I don't know. It's not looking good for Ryan Pace. Let's put it that way. I have no issue with him being demoted. You want to keep him in the organization as a scout? Great. He can evaluate talent. But there is no reason why he should even be the GM today. That's a fact. I mean, I don't understand this at all. And it'd be different if this was year one, if he was new. This isn't year one. These aren't mistakes you can't be making over and over and over again. It's just unacceptable. It's unacceptable. And yet here we are, days before the draft, and he gets another chance to draft another quarterback. And Andy Dalton, Kirk Cousins look alike. Wow. Extremely disappointing. And even, yes, a bit surprising. I really thought this would be motivation for him, this draft. I'm not going to do what I did with Mitch. I'll make this right. I'll do the right thing. Wrong. This is just a circus, and it's a complete joke. I can't believe it's that hard. I'd be okay with one, maybe two chances. Okay, fine, I get it. Made a mistake here or there. This is a pattern. Mitch, Andy Dalton, Nick Foles, Mike Glennon. Now you're drafting Davis Mills? Or you're infatuated and you're interested? And then Teddy Bridgewater? A guy who you had interest in last offseason is being paid $3 million this year. There is no understanding of the quarterback market in Hallis Hall. That's just it. There is no basic economic understanding of the quarterback market, of the marketplace, that is, NFL quarterbacks and free agency or trades. The Bears have continuously overpaid, overspent, put in too many resources into that position. And guess what? It's never paid off. Shouldn't that be a sign that it's time to change things up? I wish them the best in the draft. I do. But to me, they've already made too many mistakes. And between this Davis Mills news and the Teddy Bridgewater $3 million deal, I have to say, my hope is gone. More to come here on Sports Talk Chicago. My interview with Mark Giangreco comes up next, so stay tuned. Hey, do you want to make some money this weekend? What if I told you I could offer you $250 free, depending on any game you want? Here's what you have to do. Go to sportstalkchicago.com/cash. sportstalkchicago.com/cash. Must be 21 plus. Must be an Illinois resident. You can bet $250 free on any game you want for this upcoming weekend. Cubs and White Sox are back. The Bulls are sliding, but, you know, they're still playing. Blackhawks compete for a playoff spot, and yes, you can bet on the NFL draft. Who do you think the Bears will pick? You can put down a bet and win a lot of money real quick. At sportstalkchicago.com/cash, sportstalkchicago.com/cash. If you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Touch Chicago. Here with Jonathan Lowell, and we are back and ready for today's special guest. He's the former sports director and lead sports anchor at ABC 7 Chicago and a 3-time Emmy Award winner. Please welcome Mark Giangreco to the program. Mark, it's great to have you on. How are you?
John, thank you very much. I'm doing well, moving on and having a good time, and I really appreciate you making time for me on your show here.
What have you been up to?
Well, I tell you, I really enjoy being a civilian and being a casual fan. And I think like a lot of people at this point, I'm trying to shed the pandemic pouch and get back in shape. And things are loosening up a little bit. So I've been doing some traveling again and just exploring a lot of options and opportunities. And I don't know, it's kind of nice living this different lifestyle. But I will admit that it's tough. It is an adjustment after basically 50 years, you know?
How bizarre is it to not be at work or to not have that schedule?
Yeah, it's crazy, you know, in a physical sense. You know, my sleeping patterns are different. And again, you know, going to bed late, working late, stuff like that. It's a challenge now to get up early. You got to go to bed early because I want to make sure I get to the Old Country Buffet by 4 o'clock, you know, so. But I'm sure things will settle in, you know.
When's the last time do you remember being in this position?
Never. I've never been fired. I've never been transferred. I've never been demoted. This is the first time that I've left a job when it wasn't on my terms or my timetable. So I have to say it was a punch in the face. I mean, obviously. Didn't see it coming, but you know what? I'm moving on. I really am. I'm really glad that I didn't. I don't know. This is a weird thing to say, but I was always embarrassed by accolades and tributes and things like that. And I would always joke that, gee, I got a year and a half left on my deal. And I kind of dreading having a big going away party. I just kind of want to slip out. Well, I got my wish. not on my terms, as I said. But I have to tell you, you find out who your true friends are, both in and outside the business, when something like this happens. And the absolute tidal wave avalanche of public support on social media, coupled with the local and national backing of virtually everyone I've ever worked with or known or competed against in the business, has been really humbling and overwhelming. It's just really been crazy and so much appreciated.
Would that have been your last deal, do you think, at ABC?
Oh, yeah, I think so. You know, I'm 69 years old. I mean, it's I've still got plenty of juice left. It's just that, you know, where do I want to use that juice? Yeah, I had planned on leaving in 2022 at the end of my deal. And, you know, perhaps doing a little radio or podcast or this and that, or doing nothing. You know, I'm really blessed. I have three wonderful sons who have given me some incredible a trio of daughters-in-law, and now I have three grandkids. I mean, it's just spectacular. I'm the luckiest guy in the world, and my priorities have changed. And I can look back on, you know, a pretty exciting career. I mean, I'm pretty lucky to be able to hitch a ride on this crazy train that was Chicago sports from 1982 to the present, you know.
Do you want to stay in TV right now? Would you be open to that, or radio or podcasting?
Well, you know, I was always a radio guy from day one. That was my first love. My golden life, when I was 8 years old, listening to my little transistor radio in Buffalo, New York, was to be a top 40 rock jock. And I used to be able to get WLS and Super CFL and listen to Larry Lujack and, you know, John Records Landecker and Dick Biondi. And that's what I wanted to do. And that's what I wanted to be. And for whatever reason, Chicago was always my goal. I just thought it was just this magical place as a kid, and that's what I aspired to. So, you know, radio sounds great. Podcasts, there are no restrictions. I could say whatever I want to say. no boundaries, which could be interesting. I don't know about television. Again, I have to say I've really been flattered by a lot of inquiries, offers, and possibilities that I'm weighing right now. So I don't want to go into detail about that, but I am free to go work wherever I want to work, whenever I want to work. I do not have a no-compete clause. And so I can really do everything or nothing, John.
Are you seriously considering those offers, or are you leaning maybe towards retirement more?
I have to say that right now at this point in time, I'm considering all options.
Okay.
But you know, how many people get to read their own obit and attend their own funeral and then be able to go on with a fresh new life? You know, people have been so wonderful. I've never had to try to explain myself or speak for myself, following my departure, because everyone's done it for me, and I can't thank them enough. And, you know, I could look back on all the things that I did with my producers and cameramen at both stations, and have forged these incredible friendships and great working relationships. And we have so many great stories, and a lot of people say, ah, geez, you just embellish the hell out of that. Well, maybe a little bit, but for the most part, it's all true, because we lived in the wild, wild west back then. And, you know, I am looking forward now, though, having had this great career that I'll always savor. I'm looking forward to a bunch of new things. I have been approached about doing commercial voiceovers. I went to art school when I was younger. I've always been into designing logos for teams and leagues and, you know, stuff like that. I'm a big car guy. I love classic muscle cars and hot rods, and have been looking at perhaps doing television shows that involve that kind of stuff. So there's all kinds of stuff out there.
Mark Giangreco here on Sports Talk Chicago. Mark, are you at all concerned about the future of media?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, especially local television news is so challenged now. There are so many other platforms. Social media, while a great phenomenon, is also extremely dangerous, where everyone, qualified or not, has an opinion. Everyone's an expert. Everybody can hide behind their Twitter handle and their Facebook page and just lash out and be totally irresponsible. But it's also given players, leagues, and teams an opportunity to break their own stories. And unfortunately, they don't really need us anymore. Every D1 university, every league, every professional sports team, they have their own media departments, and they pump out all these great, really well-produced features and everything, really pumping their product. But of course, if there's any kind of controversy attached to that franchise, they're never going to deal with it. And I don't foresee anybody ever being back in a locker room again. I think the pandemic just accelerated the inevitable, where sports reporters will never be in a locker room again. It'll always be a sterilized, sanitized, homogenized Zoom interview or news conference in a press room. You know, so we had so much access back, especially in the 80s and 90s. And then in the mid-2000s, it started to become very restrictive. And I think everyone's used the excuse of the pandemic to set the tone for the future. And I don't think it's healthy. Forget about sports, because to me, sports was just all about fun and entertainment. And while we did have to deal with some serious issues from time to time, more so now than in the past, I just think that news is in jeopardy, serious news. I mean, we are the news source we choose, whether it's CNN, Fox, MSNBC, whatever, right wing, left wing, it's all attached with opinion and propaganda and really subversive stuff. And you can't get an objective newscast anywhere these days, it seems. And so forget about sports. News is in jeopardy in general, because there are so many subversive forces out there sabotaging us, you know, infecting our brains with all this subliminal stuff via social media.
Is freedom of speech a problem?
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely, it's a problem. Hey, look, I consider myself a liberal Democrat, and many people say since you left, maybe you ought to adjust your position to be a moderate. But I have to say that the pendulum has to swing too far. There has to be an overcorrection and an overreaction to get to where we need to be as a society. But I think in the process of trying to make things right, freedom of speech is being retarded a bit. But I think we have to deal with each case individually.
Sure.
And I don't think we can make blanket statements. I just think, you know, we should always have our freedom of speech, but it can't be abused to where it's hurtful and evil and attack-filled. You know, how do you regulate that? I really don't know. I don't know. But we're getting pretty deep here, man.
How difficult does that make your job?
Well, obviously, it made it very difficult. You know, again, radio, a podcast, things like that. You have a lot more freedom. You have a lot more time, just basic time to develop a thought, to listen to someone else's position, to take calls, to interact with viewers and listeners. You're doing a 3.5 minute sportscast, which over the years has become a 3 minute sportscast, which is now down to 2.5 minutes in many cases. It's tough to get out of that box and really do something creative and expand a thought. But my challenge always was, no matter how little time I got in a newscast that's now being jammed with video and stories, and sports has always been pushed to the back. And I get it. I understand. I always challenge myself to still get 9 or 10 pieces of video in a 2.5 or 3 minute sportscast. I love that. I love that challenge of making it a rapid fire delivery and trying to be creative. And I think I learned how to write first and foremost in high school, taught by the Jesuits, which is what they were known for. And then again, I learned how to write in radio when I was doing news, where it was a quick headline service on a top 40 rock station. So you had to be able to tell a story in one sentence. And that's a challenge. And I think I brought that to TV sports, where you can just cram it full of information and video and graphics and try to be funny and creative, no matter how little time you had.
Are you the last of your generation?
Dan Rohn is still over at WGN, and there's still a few of us hanging on, but I think my class, which was basically the people who came in around 82, 83, yeah, we're definitely the last of that generation. And we all had great runs, you know. And Lou Kanellis is a great friend of mine, and Dan is just a mensch, and Howard Sudbury was my buddy. And I just had a great run with these guys. And while we were quote unquote competitors, I think we all had fun working together and competing. And it's just not the same. Like I said before, there's no access. The pandemic has separated everyone. It's just Zoom interviews. You're so detached. People are doing their shows from home. I mean, I was lucky to be able to go into the studio and still work in my office and work in the studio with one other anchor. And that's the system that was set up there, which I really appreciated, because I'm not one of those people that enjoy working from home at all. And, you know, it just really just takes away so much energy from the show. And I just always appreciated the fact that I was able to go in during this past year plus, you know.
Do you have any regrets based on everything that's happened?
Well, I have one major regret, which, of course, was the Walter Payton situation. I was always a wise guy, a smart ass, shot from the hip. And during the time Walter had lost a lot of weight, we saw him at Jared Payton's news conference announcing where he was going to go to college. And I asked Brad Palmer, who was on the scene covering the news conference, they asked Walter, you know, about his appearance. And he said, I overtrained for a marathon. I was taking too many diuretics and got out of control. So like an idiot, I should have known better anyways. Obviously, that didn't sound like a great excuse, but I jumped on it and said, oh, you know, he looks like Gandhi. I could probably take him, ha ha, because our relationship was always teasing, fooling around, playing practical jokes on one another, taking shots at one another. And of course, that crushed him. He did not want people to know exactly what was wrong at the time. And when he cried at his news conference and said, God bless those who don't feel for me, I knew he was speaking directly to me. It crushed me. It tore my heart out. And that will always be my biggest regret. And nobody wants to hear that part of the story. When my name comes up, even to this day, there are a lot of people who bring that up. But I tried to call Walter 9 or 10 times after I realized what I had done and realized what the real story was. And then finally, a few months later, he called me in my office.
Wow.
And with his little voice said, hey, you're a hard guy to get a hold of. And I'm like, oh my God, Walter. And he said, look, I lied to you. I was putting people off. I didn't want anybody to know at the time. I forgive you. And he knew he was dying at that point in time. And he went out of his way to call me and say, I forgive you. I mean, that is always going to sit with me forever. I mean, that was a gift. That was an incredible act of forgiveness. But at the same time, that is the biggest regret in my career that I'll always carry with me.
Mark Giangreco, you're on Sports Talk Chicago. Mark, what's your legacy here in Chicago, do you think?
My legacy? Well, people who know me in the business, I'd like it to be that I worked really, really hard at trying to make it look easy. And I had this work ethic that I inherited from my dad and other people in my family. And the other part is I never took it seriously. I was always looking to have fun with it. It was never life and death for the most part. And it's supposed to be pure entertainment. And, you know, I liked pushing the envelope and even stepping over the line a few times because that was me. I'd like to think that I was just being myself on the air, and you have to be true to yourself, especially in a provincial market like television. I mean, like Chicago, where people on television have to be themselves or they're ferreted out as a phony immediately. The fans in this town, you know, you better be telling the truth and you better be yourself. And I would like to think that I was. I was always in trouble in grammar school and high school. I was always a problem. I was always very outspoken. I was always a wise guy. I always, you know, was in JUG, which is detention for those who didn't go to Jesuit high school. And I got that from my mom. My mom was really outspoken, in your face. So, you know, while there are certain things, like I said, that I shouldn't have done or said, for the most part, I was just trying to be me and just trying to have fun. And I hope that's what the legacy is.
Do you think all this stuff helped or hurt it? Or are you even worried about it?
My departure?
Yes.
Like I said, how many people get to leave like that or are forced to leave like that and have their reputation intact? I feel as though my reputation is intact because so many people have rallied around me, and I'll never get over that. So I think it's actually helped. Like, again, as I said earlier, who gets to read their own obit and go to their own funeral? And the testimonies have been just ridiculously, you know, rewarding and off the charts. So, you know, I'm at the point now where, okay, enough is enough. let's move on. But I mean, I try to thank each and every person who's ever posted anything on Facebook or Twitter or has called me or emailed me or whatever, whether I've met them or not. I'll always, always appreciate it.
How proud are you personally of your run, going from Buffalo to Dayton to Chicago and lasting this long in the business?
I'm very proud of it because it was a nasty business where a lot of people didn't last very long. And, you know, once again, I was lucky to be in the golden era, the heyday when we all made a lot of money and it was all really exciting and it was viciously competitive to the point where there were physical confrontations, there was sabotage. Yeah, it was the most exciting time for our business. Very proud just to have lasted this long. I remember my first day at Channel 5 in 1982, walking into the merchandise mart, I was absolutely terrified. You know, this is the big time. Oh, my gosh. And, you know, I had a guy like Chuck Kopic protect me and show me the ropes. And then, you know, I'd stand back and watch Chet and Johnny Morris and Tim Weigel go at each other in the paper every day, you know, with TV critics fanning those flames. And I, you know, was an observer and learned what to do and what not to do and how to handle myself. And, you know, it was like a young quarterback being drafted but had to sit behind the veteran quarterback for a while. That served me really well.
You mentioned sabotage or the competitiveness. Can you talk more about that? Is there a specific story?
Well, you know, there were times when accidentally on purpose, somebody would kick out somebody else's live shot cable or... So, you know,
accidentally on purpose.
Yeah, you know, little technical snafus. Or, I mean, one of the greatest stories was the first NBA championship run of Bulls and Lakers out in LA. Scottie Pippen was going to be on Arsenio Hall's show at Paramount Studios. That was a CBS show. We asked Scottie if we could ride with him. We're in the limo. We're standing out of the sunroof singing "I Love LA." We're doing a great interview on the way. And Jay Levine from Channel 2 was camped outside the studio waiting to get the exclusive. And he's camera rolling and ready to go. And I get out of the limo. And those are the most rewarding moments when you can beat the competition like that. But it's taken a step further. My producer, Bob Vorwald, who is just absolutely incredible, he posed as a CBS producer, not an NBC producer, and he got the videotape of the show, and we ran the heck out of it. And those are the kind of things. You just did what you had to do in the Wild West. You'd cheat if you had to, you know? And now, again, nowadays, none of that stuff would ever be possible.
Mark Giangreco here on Sports Talk Chicago. Mark, are the Bears bound to make a mistake in the draft?
Absolutely. And I'm rooting for them to have another terrible draft, because we're running out of ways to criticize Ryan Pace. It's absolutely ridiculous up there. As long as the McCaskies have owned the team, the whole George Halas, you know, legacy and everything else, they still really know nothing about football. No one's held accountable. There's no system of checks and balances. Ryan Pace was supposed to be the young, hot general manager, stud, taking chances, gambler, really super knowledgeable. Matt Nagy, the young, fresh head coach. And it's all kind of just gone sour. And it's pretty obvious they don't know what they're doing. And I've always maintained that most NFL teams, with all the TV money and everything else, we're so addicted to that sport and that league. It's part of our culture. But they don't have to win. They just need to keep making money. And we're all addicts, and everybody's going to buy season tickets, and everybody's still going to watch no matter how bad they are. So I am convinced that they truly are going to do everything they can to really take a chance and try to make a huge splash and try to trade up and give away the farm. But at the end of the day, which is tomorrow night, finally, we've been waiting forever, it's not going to happen. And they're going to be stuck, and they're going to draft a cornerback or a defensive end you never heard of, and that's going to be it. The whole Russell Wilson thing, you know, they made a huge push for that. They may try to revive that. But, you know, once you get past number three in the draft, that's going to set the tone for the rest of the picks. And, you know, we'll see what happens there. But I have no confidence that they're going to get a diamond in the rough. I have no confidence that they're going to get a quarterback. I have no confidence in any of their football moves at all. It's an absolute joke. And I got to tell you, it's hard to watch nine innings of baseball. I can't watch the Bulls. I watch the Hawks because I'm a diehard hockey fan. But, you know, these are tough times for Chicago sports fans, because nobody's going anywhere except perhaps the White Sox. And what's unfortunate there is only half this city cares, which has always bothered me. So I kind of miss not being in the mix, because it's easy to do a good sports cast if there's a lot of stuff happening. But I always love the challenge of doing a really great sports cast when nothing is happening. And it's the same mundane stuff every night. Cub highlight, Sox highlight, Bulls highlight, Hawks highlight. And then I always try to find something funny at the end, a kicker or a closer, to save the show. But if we could come up with some funny graphics and play with the video and, you know, use the best sound bites and try to have fun with that, my producers, Mike Johnson and Larry Snyder, we would always say, hey, that was a good nothing show. If we liked that, a good nothing show is better than, wow, we're packed with too much good stuff tonight. You know, having nothing and making something out of it was always better than having too much stuff.
What's the worst year that you remember in covering Chicago sports? The most depressing year that you had to cover on the news?
Well, I would say this past year. But thinking back, there were some really lean years with the Hawks before Rocky Wirtz took over and John McDonough and Jay Blanc brought it into the 21st century. Even the 20th century, you know, everybody knows the Cubs' legacy. And once again, I was fortunate to be part of all these teams breaking the trend, you know. So there were many, many years where it was very lean. But it's always more fun to rip teams and players than to be a rah-rah homer. So when everybody was bad, I thought it was much more fun when everybody was bad. You know, because as fans and sportscasters and sports writers and everything else, we have all the answers, you know. None of us ever played at that high level, and But we had all the answers. We could coach any team, and we could straighten out any player. So, you know, I always enjoyed that part of it more so than being a rah-rah homer and just blindly following a team no matter what. You got to call these people out. You got to call organizations out. You have to keep everybody honest. And again, back to worrying about the news business in general, you do have to have objective third-party insight. You can't allow leagues, franchises, players, and so forth to write their own stories and to push their own agenda. They have to be called out if something is wrong or if they're not performing.
Have you ever been called out by a team? Have you ever been told, stop criticizing us, this is too much?
Oh, yeah, many times. And I remember the one time when one of his many Sunday night appearances with Johnny Morris on Channel 2, Mike Ditka, who obviously had celebrated a victory too much or drowned his sorrows in a loss a little too much. I remember one night, you know, Johnny starts out saying, well, Mike, tough loss today. And he just went off going, before we get to the game, I just want to say one thing. I'm never going to talk to that Mark Giungreco again. He's a jerk. He's an idiot. And Johnny's like, okay, Mike. All right, Mike. No, we don't want you to be talking about the competition. And he just went off on me. And, yeah, there were a lot of guys that had no interest in talking to me at all. They're the whole litany of people. But Jerry Reinsdorf was not a big fan. You know, I think I rubbed Michael Jordan the wrong way a few times, but I like to think that I had a pretty good relationship with him. You know, but yeah, I mean, a lot of people just thought of me as this guy's a wise guy just trying to make a name for himself. But no, I was just trying to have fun. And a lot of people have thinner skin than others, you know.
More to come with Mark Giungreco. In just a moment, stay tuned. This is Sports Talk Chicago. And Greco still here on Sports Talk Chicago. Mark, a few more questions before we finish up. First off, your reaction to Steve McMichael's health crisis was what?
Horrifying. I was actually tipped to his condition just as I was being shown the door.
Really?
And that was the end of January, beginning of February. And I was asked by my source not to say anything or do anything with it just yet. And so I, out of respect, I agreed. And then I just have been dreading the official announcement for the past few months. It's just so unfair. It's just as terrible as it gets. There is no cure for ALS. And for anyone to know their fate and just to be deteriorating like this is just has to be the most horrifying thing in the world. And you know, most people knew Mongo, a scary, really intimidating character, an undrafted free agent cut by the Patriots, who worked himself into being an all-pro defensive tackle, who still didn't get the recognition he deserved. But his personality, his will, his presence was as big a part of that 85 Bears team as anybody else. But I got to know him as one of the smartest, most insightful people I've ever met. One of the kindest guys in the world. That Sunday night Sports Sunday show that we did on NBC was incredible. You couldn't air 30 seconds of that half hour today, of course. it was vulgar and outrageous at times, but Steve was the consummate entertainer. He always had some movie prop to torture me with. He had a plan every show to entertain as much as he did on the field earlier that afternoon. And I remember one day we're up at the old Hallis Hall, and I had brought two of my three sons, who were really, really young at the time. He said, are these your kids? I said, yeah, I didn't even know you were married. Come on. He takes them in the locker room, and it's wristbands and signed jerseys and footballs, and he's taking them around, introducing them to everybody. And, you know, pretty intimidating for maybe a 7-year-old and a 5-year-old, locker room full of naked guys smoking cigars, playing cards, you know. But Steve went out of his way to, you want to know about my personal life. And I just, appreciated going along for that ride. And I thought, you know, playing straight man to his outrageousness was one of the highlights of my career. And, you know, I remember the general manager at the time said, yeah, let's hire Steve McMichael. And then when things got out of hand, he said, you need to harness him. I said, no way, man. This is what you wanted. This is what you get, you know. But I pray for him. I've left him a couple of texts. I don't want to be that guy trying to call him. And, you know, he did his interviews and he went public. And I just want to respect his privacy. And hopefully we will talk down the road. But I just love and respect him. And again, he's one of those people that I had the privilege of covering and just, you know, being in his aura, you know, a sidekick for, you know, a day a week. Again, and Sunday nights, that forum was the most competitive time. And you're talking about sportscasters.
And Mark, before we finish up today, last question, what's the best Make Mark Do Your Job segment that you did?
Oh my gosh. Larry Snyder and I, you know, he's a very funny, creative guy. And I love doing those. I believe we did 16 of them in the mid to late 90s. And they would run like at the top of the newscast as part of sweeps as features. And then we did the regular sportscast later on. And, you know, during the pandemic, when we had no sports news, we chopped those down and ran the heck out of them all during the pandemic and brought them back and put them on the website and everything else. I enjoyed every single one of them. To pick one would be tough. I was a short order cook. I was a shoe salesman. I was a clown in Ringling Brothers Circus. I was a garbage man, a stand-up comedian in Vegas. I was a dealer in Vegas. I was a race car driver. The first one I did, I was a school teacher at a grammar school up in Wilmette. That was really fun. It just went on and on and on. I worked at Mario Tricocci, where I would do pedicures, manicures, hair and makeup. I can't pick just one because I thought they were all pretty good. And when we revived them, I said, you know what? These held up pretty well. So I thought it was just a great idea. And Larry was at the forefront of that. And we just came up with crazy bits and a lot of shtick. And those are the kind of things I really enjoy doing, more so than just covering basic sports.
Well, Mark, thank you so much for joining me. Best wishes, of course, moving forward, and really appreciate the time you gave me today. Thank you so much.
John, thank you for the opportunity, and we'll talk soon.
Great talk there with Mark Giangreco. That'll do it for us today here on Sports Talk Chicago. Big thank you to Mark Giangreco himself, Matt Dubio, WCKG, Jim DeTobin, Tomorrow Entertainment for making this show a success. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at John Z Sports and on Facebook at John Zagluo. And if you want to listen to this show at any time in podcast form, search up Sports Talk Chicago on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and SportsTalkChicago.com. Another great show comes your way tomorrow. Thank you so much for listening. Till then, stay safe, and so long, everyone.
No! No! Where are the turtles?